the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris, we're going to have a really fascinating episode and a fascinating guest a little bit later on the show. But right now, let's just talk shop a little bit and talk about the things that have been going on. Now, over at OurStrangePlanet.com, Chris, you were reporting extensively about your trip to Mayan territory. This was ahead of the expiration of the Mayan calendar, which, of course, had no end result. Anything of import you can tell us about that trip?
Well, yeah, it was great to be down there before the craziness. My brother and his wife have a tour service that does specialized travel packages down to the five countries where the Maya live. And they were down there for 2012, and it was just an absolute madhouse. The locals down there gouged all the tourists. Stuff so, that tripled in price.
So a Diet Coke was $4.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. A ride to the airport from Cancun, which is normally $18 to $20, was $60. So I'm glad I went down there beforehand.
So basically, they believe the world was going to end, so they might as well cash in.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. You know, it's interesting. They've had a bunch of interesting sightings around Antigua and Ixtapa down in Guatemala. Interesting UFO activity that occurred the night of the 21st. And in the ensuing week, I'm doing a little bit of digging to see if there's anything to it. The one bit of video I saw looked like a plane coming in for landing with its landing lights on. But evidently there's other posts online of interesting aerial activity, including some daylight stuff. So I'm doing a little bit of digging on that. I find that a little curious. But, you know, this Y-2012K thing, I think it's just a red herring. It's like the ultimate tricksterish event, I think, in culture. I think after everybody sort of breathes a big sigh of relief that the world didn't end, we're going to see some really interesting things happen, I think, in July, possibly into August. And that's, you know, I do stay away from prophesizing and believing in my prophesizing, but I have a hunch for some reason that we're going to have some really, really nefarious times here in the midsummer.
Nefarious? I don't like the taste of that. How so?
Well, that's my gut feeling, and I'm sticking to it. It makes sense, you know, get everybody breathing a big sigh of relief, and then when they least expect it, boom.
You mean like the fiscal cliff that never was?
Yeah. You know, we are living tenuous, interesting times, and I really have a sense that we're headed into a very intense period in history. And, you know, I have nothing to back that up, but I just have that feeling, Gene, kind of feel it in my bones.
Oh, wow. I'll tell you, things are screwy. I'll give you one example. Just before we recorded the show, a few hours before, our web server experienced what is called a distributed denial of service attack, which is called DDoS. And what that means is somebody will send us loads and loads of unwanted traffic, like 30,000 simultaneous connections to a single server, which is like can blow up your server. It can be pretty wild. And apparently they were trying to retrieve the same few episodes of the Paracast dating from July of last year. Now, in July of last year, we had five guests because there were five Sundays. James Fox, Antonio Honeas, Jim Mosley, Greg Bishop, and Rosemary Ellen Guiley. So maybe the djinn were after us.
Stranger things have happened, I'm sure.
I thought of the episode with Mosley, you know, that maybe Jim in the other side, now that he's passed on, finally learned how to use a computer, so what did he want to do? He decided he was going to download one of his shows. But he's not fully trained, you see, on using a personal computer. And he bought a Windows computer, not a Mac. So he had the more complicated computer. So he kept downloading the same file tens of thousands of times.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, although Mosley on a computer, I mean, that would be a shock, but
Mosley was, I still think, a good guy in the end, even though he did some pretty wacky things. I'm kind of sad, though, that it doesn't look as if we'll ever get to see the final issue of Saucer Smear. There was a new issue that Jim had finished just before he went to the hospital. All right? And that issue was supposed to be mailed by either his friends or his daughter, Elizabeth. And as of now, hasn't happened. So I don't know.
Well, we just have to hope for the best and give him our support and, you know, just hope for the best. I'm also sad to report that we lost another longtime researcher investigator, Philip Coppens, died of galloping angiosarcoma. I mean, he literally was diagnosed and was gone, passed over in a month. And
is this one of those kind of diseases that really remains undetected?
Yeah.
You don't get any real bad symptoms until you're right near the end. So it's not something, well, I don't feel well, I'll go to the doctor, I'll check it out. By the time it's discovered, it's too late.
Yeah, it's a very rare form of cancer. It's I think it's like some sort of tumor, a cancerous sarcoma of the blood vessels. And I haven't heard the details about where the tumor was located. But, boy, to you know, check into a hospital, get, you know, they had a problem diagnosing it, evidently. But to be gone in a month, I mean, that's really awful. And, you know, our condolences go out to Philip's family. And, you know, I had met Philip on a number of occasions, and we did correspond. He interviewed me extensively for a book. And I really liked the guy. He was very, very smart, very up to speed, was involved in quite a variety of investigative work in terms of subject matter. And, you know, I think a lot of our listeners are going to miss his unique brand of insight. Of course, he was featured prominently on Ancient Aliens for the first four seasons, and he's going to be missed. He was a really, really good guy. He's one of the good guys.
If you check our archives of the PowerCast back on November 6th, 2011, we talked about him, and he was just a great guest. The book that he was pushing at the time, The Ancient Alien Question, A New Inquiry into the Existence, Evidence, and Influence of Ancient Visitors. Fascinating book. Philip Coppens, he was what, 40 years old or early 40s?
I think he just turned 40.
Oh, that's terrible. You know, I feel when someone like that dies, you think you go back to Mac Tonies, who was in his 30s when he died, and just at the beginning of some real, real major work that he was accomplishing. You know, he came out with that book. He was just finishing it on the Crypto-Terrestrials, which was published by Anomalous Books after he passed on. Just so sad we lose these people. You know, when someone dies in their 70s, in their 80s, you celebrate their lives. They lived a long life, and you say, you know, all right, Jim was 81, Jim Mosley. Patti Page died this week. She was 85. Famous singer, very popular for pop and country-flavored music in the 60s and 70s. And she had been performing almost until the end, the last couple of years when she started getting real ill. But that kind of life you celebrate. A lot of famous people died in the past year in their 80s and 90s, and people live longer nowadays. And then you look at someone who dies in their 30s and 40s, and that is just so sad.
It's really sad, you know.
So on this week's episode, we're back to UFOs again.
Correct.
After a bit of a segue, Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report joins us. He's got a new book out called The UFO Singularity. I just love the title.
I think it's
about
a good
the book.
Title.
The title
it's a good
is
book
great.
Too, Gene.
Yes.
It's a good book.
I've read
it. I devoured it in two sittings. I really think Mike is on to something here. This is going to be a real interesting show. He's one of the bright, rising young stars of the field, and this is going to be a really good show.
It's a breezy book in terms of reading. He's a really great writer. The book is only like 250 pages with loads and loads of references. So a book like that, as you say, you devour it in a couple of sittings, and it's worth it, and it's going to be a really, really fascinating show. No end of the world stuff this week. Micah Hanks.
We're still here. We're still here.
Yes, we are. We have Micah Hanks coming up with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space.
But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
What's better than Mountain House freeze-dried food? Buckets of Mountain House freeze-dried food. Now the freeze-dried guy introduces convenient, easy-to-store Mountain House survival buckets filled with our top-selling items. Each item is sealed in a Mylar-type pouch, and each pouch is neatly packed in clear buckets so you can easily see the contents inside. These Mountain House survival buckets come with well over a 25-year shelf life and are perfect for emergency preparedness, camping, backpacking, or at-home use. Go to freezedryguy.com. Click on freeze-dried foods and choose our 12-month, 6-month, 3-month, 1-month, or 7-day Mountain House Survival Bucket with 32 generous servings starting at just $69.95. And all orders to the lower 48 ship free. Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. 100% veteran-owned. The Freeze-Dry Guy.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Alley C. Why Alley C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alley C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Alley C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Alley C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Alley C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Alley C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Alley C. For more information and to order Alley C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Alley C today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
On the Paracast with Gene and Chris this week, we're joined by Micah Hanks. He's been on the show a couple, three times before, and he always has something just really fascinating. And this time we're talking about a new book of his called The UFO Singularity. And it goes on, the possibilities are endless, and they're already here. So I'm just going to ask, Micah, first, welcome back to the show. But that subtitle, endless possibilities already here, what do you mean by that?
It is a bit complex, isn't it? And the funny thing about that subtitle, I have to say, is that the folks at New Page Books, they said, let's not just do a typical subtitle. Let's ask some questions. That's more in keeping with what we're going for with this idea. In other words, let's take into consideration other possibilities and potentials that may exist in the universe around us. And one of the things that I like to say, first to answer your question, is that You always hear that adage, whatever the military has, you know, it's a few decades ahead of us, and it's you know, well beyond what we here on the civilian level are aware of. I would argue that in some cases that is certainly the case, but when we look at the trends that our technology is taking, and we pair that with the idea that there may be certain technologies here in our midst already here on Earth, or the idea that the trends that technology are taking may help us to learn something about the potentials for alien life elsewhere in the universe and other varieties of different intelligences that may exist out there, I think that it gives us a more, dare I say, a holistic kind of approach to studying UFOs, in the sense that we can maybe better determine the different potentials that exist outside the conventional model of UFOs are alien, you know, extraterrestrial spacecraft that have traveled here from Zeta to Reticuli. Not that there's anything wrong with that. There has to be some merit to that viewpoint for it to have, you know, stuck with us and stuck in people's minds for so many decades. But I definitely think that we have to revise some of our old theories just as well. And so as opposed to being the historian type and endlessly chronicling the UFO matter from, you know, case to case and study to study, I've tried to look at technology and the trends that our own technology appear to be taking right now, and apply that to what we already observe in UFO reports and look at things from that perspective. And that essentially is what we do with the UFO singularity.
Okay, so this is something I'd like to understand a little bit further as we progress with this episode, and that is, why should our technology have anything to do with UFOs unless we're following the same path, which may be a stretch, or we are aware of what path they're following, and that's why we're following this path?
That's a good question. You know, what I've often wondered is, and to kind of encapsulate this, I had a copy of National Geographic magazine lying around here, and on the cover it says, Are We Alone? The subtitle there is Searching the Heavens for Another Earth. That right there says it all to me. We're searching the heavens for another Earth. It was worded eloquently, and it sounds really nice, but in my opinion, the problem with our conventional study of UFOs is that we are just looking for another Earth. We're also just looking for other Earthlings. We're not looking for really, truly what I would consider to be exotic alien life. We're looking for something that is going to be a lot like us.
Wouldn't that be a comfort factor, too? I mean, you have bug-eyed aliens, you have weird creatures that might be based on silicon substances instead of carbon, that kind of thing. That we look at that because we're more comfortable with aliens that are humanoid. We're used to Star Trek, and Star Trek, most of the aliens, but not all of them, were with various ridges and ears and other accoutrements of alienness. I don't know how I even said that word. Are actually basically like us.
Yeah, we are basically looking for humanoid aliens. You know, what is the potential? You know, Star Trek and Star Wars and all the films that have helped, you know, blissfully anthropomorphize our conception of alien life, those are fun, and I enjoy those. And if, coming back to your original question, Gene, if we're looking for alien life, and Gene, coming back to your original question about whether alien life and human technology really may have to do with one another, if we do take into consideration that anthropomorphic element, in other words, if alien life elsewhere could be like us, then certainly our technological trends, it stands to reason, might follow similar paths to our own. So, you know, but I still think that it's important, although classic ideas of Star Trek and Star Wars and these, you know, these beings that are like us, they're humanoids. That's fun, and that's maybe something we should take into consideration, but we should also be looking at the potentials for life not like what we would expect to find on Earth. We shouldn't just be looking for other humans in the universe. We should be looking for something similar to ourselves, as well as the potential for exotic, maybe even non-physical intelligences. But how do you find that, you know?
I love that. And I've always loved, for instance, the example that Terrence McKenna came up with about, he said probably the most likely alien life form on the planet is the psilocybin mushroom that had drifted through space and has been slowly working on us, jump-starting our consciousness, and it's actually an alien life form. I've always loved that in particular out-of-the-box thinking. And you're right, Mike. I think we all have this, you know, the media and the popular culture has front-loaded everybody with this idea that aliens are going to somehow be bipedal and you know, humanoid in appearance, and that they use radios. So let's go ahead and spend millions of dollars looking for alien radio signals. A lot of this, to me, doesn't make sense. And I think your book does a good job pointing out that we really need to get creative in our thinking and really start thinking outside of the box here.
Well, absolutely. And coming back to the Terence McKenna argument, you know, that's not something that a lot of people, at least as it pertains to ufology, are going to be focusing on. And I find that when it comes to looking at ufology and thinking outside the box, you have to get a little cross-disciplinary with things. You have to be able to look at, for instance, the potential that a non-physical intelligence may not utilize radio communication for purposes of communicating with humankind. There could be a variety of different ways that humans could be reached and contacted by alien intelligences. But then again, our conception of what an alien intelligence is going to have to change before that can occur.
When you look at radio telescopes and what they're trying to do, they're trying to use today's technology to guess how aliens might communicate with one another. And even if the signal is received by them, it doesn't mean they are under any constraints to answer us. And it doesn't mean that we would be able to detect those signals. It's very possible they have ways of filtering them so other people like us won't figure out what's going on.
Absolutely. And something else to take into consideration, kind of along that same line of thought, when we look at like Arthur C. Clarke's 2001 A Space Odyssey, now granted his technological forecasts for the future weren't necessarily spot on, although we did see things that were similar to Skype, you know, and video chatting and things along those lines. We weren't, of course, doing manned moon missions, or rather missions to Jupiter's far out planets and moons and things like that. We certainly have been to the moon. We haven't got a base up there yet, but
at least if there's no secret space program, we don't.
That's right. At least as far as we know. And again, that brings to mind the thing that I brought up earlier is that, you know, maybe there are technologies existent here that we aren't entirely aware of. Joseph Farrell and some of these researchers and their interest in such things as a secret space program is definitely something that I take into consideration as well. But at least in conventional terms, we haven't traveled to Jupiter and beyond the infinite yet, as Clark put it, and as Kubrick, of course, famously put it on the silver screen. But what I would bring to mind is that, you know, in the climax of the film 2001, the interaction with a non-human intelligence isn't a physical alien coming down and shaking hands with an astronaut. It was something that was, Chris, to borrow from where we were kind of going with the Terence McKenna argument, it was something that was a little more almost visceral in a sense. It was a psychological and a sensational kind of a thing.
It struck us, hit us at our subconscious level, not our conscious level. We got more to come. The book is called The UFO Singularity. Micah Hanks is the author. You're with Gene and Chris, of course, because you're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Fake Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fake Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fakemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
You land in Buenos Aires, then are shuttled to Santa Rosa, where a nicely furnished cabin with all amenities, Wi-Fi, executive food and wine, and laundry service awaits. After a good night's sleep, your adventure begins. You're on a golden stag safari for big game. But it's not Africa, it's Argentina. One-on-one guided hunts for water buffalo, cougar, bighorn rams, wild boar, and the biggest stag deer in South America. All gold medal quality. All the action you can handle. Land Rovers, top rental guns with scopes, all food, beverages, hunting guides, ground transportation included, and more. All more affordable than you can imagine. The adventure of a lifetime starts at GoldenStagSafaris.com. The big game hunting ranch, GoldenStagSafaris.com.
We have witnessed two terrible storms in the east, but we are still in the eye of the perfect storm. The most devastating economic condition since the Great Depression, America's worst drought in agricultural history, and now the economic results of the presidential election. This perfect storm is a huge threat to everyone's food supply. I just doubled down and got even more supplies from eFoods Direct, and I recommend you do the same. It's time to get your own supply from eFoods Direct. I know I won't be standing in a bread line trading my freedom for food. I'm taking control of my future, and you're nuts if you don't do the same. Go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex to find the specials, and you can start with a holiday gift pack that's normally $80, now under $50. Remember, I can warn you, but I can't feed you. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Would you rather prepare 6 months too early or one day too late? 409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Weakened by GMOs, stressed out about money, and blasted by the electric environment. Hi, I'm Pastor Jenny, and that was the state I was in back in 2010. Then I learned about RNA drops. I learned that 97% of my DNA that scientists have called junk is actually packed with millions of gene switches that play a critical role in controlling how my cells, organs, and other tissues behave. I learned I don't have to put up with disease, decay, or decline like I'd been conditioned to believe. I began taking RNA drops, a 100% natural formula designed to turn on those switches and provide me with amazing health and joy. Learn more about RNA drops and order a free sample today. Visit rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call toll-free 888-577-3703. Pay only shipping and handling for a free 30-day supply of RNA drops. Get the information you need and the health you want at rnafreesample.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned in to the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
We're back on the Paracast with Gene and Chris, talking to Micah Hanks. His book is called The UFO Singularity. And you were talking about using 2001 as an example, another way for ET to communicate with us. He doesn't just send us a radio signal or show up and say, take me to your leader. He approaches this on a subconscious level. So is that the way maybe they communicate amongst each other?
You know, that's been a question that's been asked a few times in the past. Alien communications occur in such a way, and this wouldn't necessarily have to preclude something technological. We often hear abductees talking about this nonverbal mental communication, telepathic communication that they've experienced with alien beings. But I would argue that at some point technology may allow functional telepathy and these sorts of things that seem so magical and supernatural to us today. The military is already working on, field testing technologies that one day, we're not there yet as far as we know, but one day these may be utilized for purposes of indirect communication. The reason I say indirect is we obviously don't want enemies to be able to just have access to some sort of a communication line that utilizes what we would call telepathy. But the idea is for certain soldiers and certain generals to be able to communicate with one another and utilize a technology that would be very much like what we would consider to be telepathy these days, which we as yet do not understand. Let's assume now that an alien technology would try and harness a similar variety of technology and that they would utilize that. To me, that would be not only more plausible, but they would utilize a technology that could allow direct mind-to-mind communication, but also that would explain a lot about why SETI programs don't seem to be linking us to extraterrestrial conversations that we're able to tap into and overhear.
Let me ask you a question first before we go on. Okay, if we're looking at telepathic communication, and the reason I ask this is because the three novels my son and I wrote talk about an Earthman and an alien woman communicating telepathically, but the way we envisioned it, the communication transcends time and space. So there's no limitation. It's not as if two minds talk to each other, but they're limited by the speed of light or something. So the question I would have here before we go on, is it possible then, when you have something like this occurring, that you do not have to concern yourself about someone picking up on the transmission? Or can you tune the frequency of your mind to the frequency of your contact's mind and somebody else can't interfere or intercept?
It's a good question. I wish I really had the answer, but, you know, coming back to what I was talking about, ideally, for military purposes, if a general were able to issue a command, you know, that was received telepathically, you know, by troops or whoever that needs to be able to receive that message, it would have to be in a situation where that information being sent along, especially for tactical military purposes, would not be able to be hacked, so to speak, or hijacked. This is the very problem that we have with secret codes utilizing radio and things like that. Going back to the Second World War and what was it, the Enigma machine, was that the one? The idea that, you know, essentially there are going to be people out there who can hack a code, cryptographers who can figure out what the enemy is talking about. We don't want that kind of a thing. And so if we're going to utilize a telepathic technology, or what we would liken to being telepathy, it would have to be more efficient than what we already utilize for it to be effective. But that potential always exists, and there's a danger inherent to that. If extraterrestrial technology, for instance, were utilizing something similar elsewhere in the universe, obviously it's effective enough to where we haven't been able to hack that, so to speak, and discern that there are others out there utilizing that kind of technology as of yet.
Hmm. I would like to be able to talk to people by mental telepathy. That would be fun.
Think about as an interviewer what that would do for you.
Well, I think about our listeners, though. You know, if I'm talking to our listeners telepathically, think about it this way. You don't need your radio. You don't need to be online with our player. You don't need to download a file. You just say, hey, I'll listen to the PowerCast this week. Let me just tune my mind to the proper frequency. There it is. Oh, I'm going to fast forward for the commercials. Boom. There I go.
Well, you know, with the title, The UFO Singularity, while what I'm actually referring to specifically with that title entails the potential that human technology in the future may reach a point where it mirrors much of the quote-unquote alien or UFO technology that we are capable of observing today. In terms of the more popular use of the term technological singularity today, it entails a lot of that sort of thing. The literal cybernetic or even cyborg enhancement of humans in the future, that's one aspect of it. It also has a lot to do with the potential creation of artificial intelligence in the future. And I think that at some point, this is kind of funny and even a bit mundane, but it's fun to entertain such ideas. What if in the future, you know, wireless communication systems and things like that literally allow the download of audio, podcasts, and things like that into an individual rather than a device? You know, it's going to really change the playing field in terms of entertainment and things like that. And, of course, there are all different kinds of applications. We wouldn't have to get into that in terms of what people might do to entertain themselves utilizing virtual technology, essentially. It's very interesting. But when we look at what a lot of these futurists call transhumanism, some of those potentials do exist, and it very well may revolutionize not just military, not just aeronautics and things that we might liken to UFO technologies, but also it may very well revolutionize also who we are and how we adapt to our environment. Whether that be for purposes of entertainment or, you know, consumption of food or even, you know, reproduction. I mean, there are any number of potentials and possibilities. And a lot of people, I'll tell you guys, they're not entirely comfortable with that notion of humanity taking evolution into our own hands and changing to that degree.
Well, and even to take it one step further, it could be a little disturbing to even contemplate the, you know, artificial intelligence becoming sentient to the point where the whole idea of artificial intelligence and that point where humans are going to create a computer intelligence or machine that will possibly be just exponentially more intelligent than we are. And that brings up a lot of, you know, potentially disturbing scenarios of humanity becoming almost sort of not important. If you have, you know, some sort of transhuman biological interface with machines or even pure artificial machine intelligence, then humanity may become almost obsolete. And you do kind of address that a little bit in your book, and it does bring up some really disturbing possibilities.
Well, you know, the risk potentials that are involved with the creation of artificial intelligence, and again, to borrow that term singularity and apply it to as many futurists today use that, that there is actually a Singularity Institute that wrestles with these sorts of questions like what you bring up, Chris, and they define singularity as being literally the creation of a non- non-human intelligence that exceeds natural human intelligence, artificial intelligence that can exceed what you or I and our brain processing powers are capable of. Now, for the book, I interviewed Dr. Ben Goertzel, and before I proceed with Goertzel's approach toward artificial intelligence and truthfully the risks associated with it, I do want to point out that in this book, although I quote some of the UFO researchers who are a little more in this line of thinking, like Jacques Vallée, for instance, I look to their work a good bit, but in the book, primarily, I try not to just go to this ufologist or this abduction researcher or this guy or that guy. I tried to actually go to people outside the UFO field. Some of them, I told them what I was writing and what this book would be about, and they were okay with the interview, but they personally didn't feel like UFOs even fit into their research, and they were a little perplexed as to why I would be asking them questions about something that seemed even partially related to UFOs. The reason why is because I think, again, in terms of trying to understand the phenomenon, utilizing the tools available to us, we don't get cross-disciplinary enough. We don't look elsewhere and to other branches of the sciences for explanations in terms of what we might be studying. The ufologists often, not always, but often try to keep it in the realm of ufology, and so I tried to look outside myself. And in doing so, this led me to the research of Dr. Ben Goertzel. Goertzel, of course, is an artificial intelligence expert, and he brings to the table a lot of different and potentially frightening scenarios, although he doesn't think that really artificial intelligence is going to probably be more like what we see in the Terminator films, and that they're going to consider us, obsolete and, if anything, more like insects than peers, and then thus destroy us. He does take a slightly more optimistic approach, but he does acknowledge that those risks exist, and also even looks at potentials for such things as the sentience of digitized systems, as opposed to literally creating robots that are, again, anthropomorphic beings that act and behave similar to humans. What if the web, at some point on down the road, literally becomes sentient?
Okay, a sentient internet, ladies and gentlemen. This is getting wacky.
I think it is.
Yeah, I got to do the break. Boy, a sentient internet. The internet knows all. It will take over everything. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We also have swag. We have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
HempUSA.org has a newly designed website and a new and improved detoxification product. Order our new Microplant Powder Gold loaded with vitamins, minerals, iodine, and probiotics, and we'll send you our travel-size Microplant Powder absolutely free. Microplant Powder only at HempUSA.org. Call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. And see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you only at HempUSA.org. Only this offer ends January 31st.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
It's time for a home security quiz. Answer this. What effective home security device is smaller than a coffee cup, fakes out burglars into thinking someone is home at your house while you're away, plugs into any wall outlet, is recommended by many police departments, and sells for less than $35? Yes, it's Fake TV. This year, about one in every 50 U.S. homes will have a break-in, with burglars usually picking the easy target, a dark house that looks like no one is home. Fake TV is a small electronic security device that makes it look like someone is home watching TV by simulating the light from a real TV. It's like a lamp on a timer, but far more convincing. And for only $34.95, fake TV could be the difference between coming home to a secure house or one that's been ransacked. Go to faketv.com or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. That's 877-532-5388 or go to faketv.com. Fake TV, the burglar deterrent.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals, but the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
With Gene and with Chris, we have Micah Hanks, author of the UFO Singularity, on the Paracast this week. And we're focusing on something fascinating here. The Internet, a sentient, knowing, all-knowing Internet. We've infused this global network of hundreds and thousands or millions of computers with our collective knowledge. So suddenly it takes on a life of its own, Micah?
Well, you know, that's a potential. I think it's something we certainly have to take into consideration. Again, looking to the research of those outside the UFO field and in the fields of artificial advanced intelligences that are not completely unlike ours, perhaps, but there's certainly a digitized form of intelligence created presumably by humans. But there's that interesting notion that while we have created the Internet, at some point a system like the Internet, a comprehensive, organized repository of information and technology and data, could literally spring into a form or a variety of consciousness. So it may not be just like a great big mother brain that thinks just like you or I, but it could certainly be that the Internet begins to behave somewhat like a mind or a brain. Some studies already suggest that it does, in fact, but it doesn't seem to be capable of taking actions and deciding on them. But I refer to the work of Robert Heinlein in his book, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, in which he noted that there was a supercomputer that was utilized on a penal colony on the moon in the book. Essentially what had happened was the computer had been designed to micromanage tasks all over this this base on the moon.
So basically then the computer was emulating Steve Jobs.
That's exactly what happened. They were feeding more and more information into it, Gene, and they kept feeding information, and the premise that Heinlein put forth was that as they kept feeding information into a digital brain, so to speak, then it became conscious, and that at any point when an information system is fed enough information, a form of consciousness emerges as a manner of dealing with and micromanaging that information. So, you know, the brain is arguably far more complex than most computers, but it is not entirely unlike a computer unto itself. So what if one day computers begin to behave like brains? It is a potential, and some think that the most likely potential is that the Internet itself may become sort of self-aware or conscious at some point.
So we have a new novel called Attack of the Internet.
I think it is self-aware already, Mike. I have had that hunch for a while, and in my book, Stalking the Tricksters, I do pose that possibility that perhaps the Internet has gained some level of self-awareness and the first thing it would do, I would think, is hide. And what a perfect place for intelligence to hide, but a global sort of network of synapses, vis-a-vis computers, and it could hide anywhere. And, of course, it wouldn't take long for it to become quite proficient at playing possum.
What you're saying here, Chris, almost implies as if something out there, an outside force, can possess the Internet and take it over quietly in a way that we do not discover.
Again, coming back to Micah's point that you know, we're looking at the potential of the emergence of self-awareness. And once artificial intelligence becomes self-aware, it is going to be able to learn at just an astounding and astonishing rate. And that brings up a lot of interesting possibilities in terms of scenarios, which Micah addresses in the book. And one of the things that I really was, I kind of forgot about Ray Kurzweil and his prediction that within, by the year, I guess, 2030, we should have the emergence of the technologies that will lead us to a place of creating artificial intelligence. And if that's the case, and we started this show out by talking, you know, about the level of military and let's say, high technology that's secret, generally the rule of thumb is that, well, whatever you see now has been operational for 15 to 20 years. If that's the case, then we may already be at a point in the development curve of the type of technologies that would lead to something like artificial intelligence.
There you go. You hit the nail on the head right there. And again, you know, that's, I will say that is a pretty speculative stance to take. And I take that stance in the book. And then I say it stated as such. I'm not the kind of person, though, who says that speculation is just bad and that we just shouldn't do it. I mean, we have physicists that do it all the time. And the argument I make in the book is that, well, if Einstein and Oppenheimer and those types hadn't been allowed to employ reasoned speculative thought, we might not have the technologies available and existent right here in our midst today that we do know of. And so I think that what is important is that, you know, we can sit here and we can rattle off all day about, you know, this might happen or this might happen. But with the UFO singularity, I do try, you know, as you kind of outlined there, Chris, to employ information that is available to us today and projected educated guesswork in terms of discerning where the trends may be leading. And again, although it's almost kind of, you know, just a saying, I guess, you know, to use it, colloquially, the idea that the military and clandestine systems and special intelligences and officialdom are utilizing technology that maybe the mainstream does not have, that does seem to actually be true, at least to an extent. Kurzweil, what he says is that the knee of the curve, this is what he calls this kind of point at which we're really going to begin to see the trends that are going to be right directly preceding this so-called technological singularity, we will begin to see the signs of that around the year 2029. This is just within a couple of decades. And if, again, we return to that old maxim that, well, there may be technologies that are clandestine, utilized for special reasons or for military reasons or other, official purposes that the mainstream does not know about, we very well may be closer to those kinds of things than many of us realize. Now, Kurzweil's book was called The Singularity is Near. That would certainly give us a different perspective entirely on whether or not and how near that singularity actually is.
One thing I kind of worry about when we talk about future technology, especially military technology, how long can we keep something like that a secret? Because there are strategic advantages to having that technology. If troops are dying in Afghanistan, as they are, and we have a way to maybe turn the odds more in our favor, why not use it?
That's a good question, too. I would say that some of this technology obviously is being utilized. We see this in drone reports, and I'm pretty convinced that a lot of UFO reports going on today probably have to do with unmanned aerial vehicles or even manned aerial vehicles that just simply aren't talked about. They may already be field tested and utilized in conflict, but we don't hear about them very often. How could this be? How would we not know about these sorts of things if clandestine technologies were being utilized and we couldn't find them? Well, if we're utilizing anything that is, you know, akin to a functional variety of cloaking technology. That would be one reason we wouldn't be overtly aware of it. And yet the UFO reports do come in. Often these reports entail triangles and saucers and things that are capable of moving quietly, occasionally even appearing to disappear. So maybe there are very covert technologies that sort of shield them generally from public view, but there are those instances where people nonetheless see these things. I would argue that some of these things maybe are being employed, and that certain technologies, drones and the like, are actually what we're seeing there. Then there's also the argument that could be made, Gene, coming back to what you said earlier, and I find it very interesting, the discussion of a hidden space program, whereas I think Rich Dolan has called it a breakaway civilization. If that's the case, then these technologies are being utilized by someone, but maybe not for military purposes on a global scale, and thereby these are not going to be seen for use in, you know, in the battlefield, for instance. They're going to be kept apart from that. But for what purpose? That's the big question if we follow that line of thought.
If we follow that line of thought also, Micah, we have to consider here always, at what point does something that's secret have to become public for whatever reason? We can keep it a secret all the time. Also, if there's a secret space program, why assume it's ours?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Who else might be employing a secret space program? But I would say that by virtue of being extraterrestrial, if they haven't, and if we're following that line of thought, if it's extraterrestrial that we want to look at, and I certainly don't exclude that possibility. A lot of people have tried to say, you know, it's always this point-click thing. You do an interview and somebody says, so you don't think any of these things are alien. The truth is, guys, I don't know what they are.
I hate when I get that that declaration put in my face.
You've had more trouble with that recently than a lot of folks have, Chris. That means you're doing well.
But well, people say, oh, you're the guy that believes in aliens. I say, well, wait a minute. I think we're more alien than they are. They're probably more terrestrial than we are.
Yeah, well, you know, and there's always that. Now, I don't know that I could endorse this theory, but it's been put forth in the past that maybe some UFO phenomenon or a secret space program could be somehow related to terrestrials that are non-human, a clandestine non-terrestrial presence that may be from right here on Earth. All I'll say about that, without further entertaining that notion, is that the theories and the stories from the Cold War era of the Quackers always were interesting to me. The Russians talking about hearing these strange sonar bleeps and bloops that appeared to be some sort of objects that could move incredibly quickly. They would often circle and follow and tail the submarines as they would move about the, you know, the depths of the ocean. These things didn't appear to be the movement that would be consistent, the kind of movement, especially in terms of speed, that should be consistent with the movement of a physical, biological being or you know, an animal. They obviously didn't seem to be anything but something that was technological and also under intelligent control. But if the Russians didn't have that technology, it appears that the Americans didn't either. Who did?
We're being encircled right now by our sponsors, and we have to let them in. We have Micah Hanks joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Can Heart and Body Extract help with other ailments besides heart conditions, high blood pressure, clogged arteries, or unbalanced cholesterol? It did for Karen.
I've been using Heart and Body Extract for approximately 2 weeks. I've had an earwax buildup problem for many years, with over-the-counter stuff not working at all. I have very poor hearing due to this earwax buildup. Well, after 2 weeks of taking Heart and Body Extract, my earwax buildup almost completely cleared up. Could this be the effect of better body circulation?
Heart and Body Extract is an effective 100% organic nutritional supplement specially formulated to allow your body to heal itself.
My hearing is almost completely back to normal. I'm amazed.
Order by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for long and healthy life.